We, the National Football League, believe Black Lives Matter. I personally protest with you and want to be part of the much needed change in this country. We are listening. I am listening. And I will be reaching out to players who have raised their voices and others on how we can improve and go forward for a better and more united NFL family.
That was NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell in a video posted to social media on Friday. In response to another video starring players like Patrick Mahomes and DeAndre Hopkins asking the league to condemn systemic racism and apologize for silencing protests. It's been a wild few days in the NFL, and that's before you even mention the fact that the President of the United States, Donald Trump, tweeted at Goodell. Today, the Undefeated's Dominique Foxworth joins us to unpack it all and explain what's changed since Kaepernick first took a knee. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Tuesday, June 9th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Marathon. Hey, Dominique, how's your morning going?
Oh, it's been busy. I started with a nice 6 a.m. trip down to the D.C. protest with my whole family. And then I went from there over to the studio to get up in First Take, and no lunch. But now I'm here with you.
Thank you so much for your sacrifice.
I mean, it's the little thing.
Dominique Foxworth is a senior writer for The Undefeated and the former president of the NFL Players Association. It has been an absolutely wild few days for those of us who cover the NFL. I don't even know where to begin. So I'll start where this podcast left off on Friday, because that evening, after the players put out a video calling on the NFL to apologize for how they've treated protesters in the past, they did just that. Roger Goodell published a video acknowledging that the league had made a mistake in silencing the voices of its players.
We, the National Football League, admit we were wrong for not listening to NFL players earlier and encourage all to speak out and peacefully protest.
Then on Sunday night, President Donald Trump wrote a tweet speculating that the league was going to allow kneeling to reemerge as a protest. We also saw members of the U.S. Congress kneeling yesterday in the Capitol in memory of Black victims of police violence. Dominique, we will discuss all of this, but first of all, what do you make of all of these things happening so quickly?
Man, it feels like everything in our lives is happening so fast. So why would the NFL be any different? Like, it feels like we're in fast forward and like the earth is spinning slightly faster than it was before. So I can barely keep up, but at least it feels like we're all moving in the, well, not all of us, but most of us are moving in the right direction.
I think what's so stunning about all of this is contrasting it with what happened just a few years ago when Colin Kaepernick first protested. It started in the summer of 16 when he was with the 49ers and he sat during the national anthem in an August preseason game. He was asked about it and said this.
I'll continue to sit. I'm going to continue to stand with the people that are being oppressed. To me, this is something that has to change. And when there's significant change, and I feel like that flag represents what it's supposed to represent, and this country is representing people the way that it's supposed to, I'll stand.
Then after a conversation he had with Nate Boyer, a U.S. Army veteran, a former NFL long snapper, Kaepernick decided to kneel rather than sit, a move designed to respect the troops. And Dominique, the world noticed. Can you describe how America, and by America, I mean fans, the NFL itself, analysts, viewers, how everyone reacted to this simple act of protest back then?
I think there felt like an enormous backlash. And I think it was from a small group, but a loud group. You and I had these conversations back then, and I had these conversations with a lot of my friends, and we were impressed and proud of Colin and understood what he was saying and what he was trying to do. But so many other people chose, in my mind, it was a choice. They chose to misconstrue the statement that he was making, in part because I think that they didn't like him and what he represented, and they wanted to find a way to tear him down because they couldn't tear him down on the merits of what he was saying because everyone knew what he was saying was true. So they then make it about the troops or they make it about the flag when it so clearly was not about that ever.
he was out of the league in 2017, but the protests continued, and that was the first time the president commented on them.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now. Out. He's fired. He's fired.
Some of the owners condemned Trump's remarks, but over the next year, 2 years, Dominique, as you remember, they were divided on how the league should handle the protests, on how they themselves handle the protests. Who could forget that image of Jerry Jones kneeling, not during the anthem, but before, and then staring directly at the camera and into our souls. And then in 2018, the NFL seemed to implement a policy that would fine players for kneeling and prohibit them from doing so. But then after backlash, they walked it back. Basically, Dominique, the league has long had a difficult time navigating this issue in a unified fashion. Why do you think that was?
So we have this conversation in the past. The league is not a monolith. And I know that firsthand from being president of the union. Like, I remember negotiations, not all factions of ownership or even executives want the same thing. So that could be part of the reason. And also, I think their guiding principle is normally money. I don't think they were always sure where the money was on this situation. While it felt like there was a loud minority arguing against Kaepernick being able to kneel, I think there was also a group, which I believe is the majority, that understood that America is about having the right to do those sorts of things.
I think it's worth stressing here that amidst all of this back and forth between the NFL and the president, NFL players continue to protest. Kenny Stills, Marshawn Lynch, Eric Reed. Colin Kaepernick alone, however, was singled out and stigmatized and sort of the subject of the intense backlash that he was. Why do you think that happened?
Well, he was the symbol. He was it. He was the guy. He was the name that people knew. He was the name that people associated with otherness. And in order to keep him out the league, I think that is what made people feel good. To your point about the players continuing to protest, even after Colin was out of the league, it just speaks to like the conviction and the power that they felt in this movement. And it brings me to thoughts about the owners, because I know you and I had this conversation before about how Roger kind of acts as a shield for the owners, and that's on us. When these things come up, we need to talk about how the owners feel about them and not necessarily Roger. Mm-hmm. And that's where I really get confused, because the players, who have much fewer resources than the owners, were willing to stick their neck out and sacrifice. And it blows my mind that people with as much as they have, like, they really don't have any reason to fear backlash in any way, why they wouldn't speak up on what is right.
Given everything that's happened over the last few days and everything the NFL has said, do you think there's a chance, Dominique, that Colin Kaepernick might play again?
I absolutely think there's a chance. So I think the NFL probably wants it at this point. And everything I know about people inside the league office, Roger always wanted it. And maybe it's clear to the people who didn't want it, maybe the team owners or general managers, now that having him in would probably be good for the league going forward. But I'd be surprised if Colin would accept it at this point. I know if I were him, I wouldn't. Like, you don't get to use me now or try to co-opt what I stand for now and be a part of it when you feel like it's popular, but you were against it when you felt like it was unpopular. That, to me, would be hard for me to reconcile if I were in his shoes.
All right, after the break, let's talk about the NFL statement and what might happen going forward. Hi, guys. Given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup, so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply. Dominique, Roger Goodell put out that video in response to a video from players in the NFL, not just players, star players, who released a video message calling on the league to take action and condemning racism.
On behalf of the National Football League,
this is what we, the players,
would like to hear you state.
We, the National Football League,
condemn racism and the systematic oppression of black people.
When you saw that video and you saw players like Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson in it, what did you make of it?
Yeah, you named the quarterbacks. The quarterbacks are who matters in this league. And the future of this league is black quarterbacks. The television drama that is the NFL, the leading men, the stars that people show up to watch are the quarterbacks. And Patrick Mahomes is widely considered the best quarterback we've ever had in this league from a talent perspective. If he says Black Lives Matter, it means more than if Brandon Marshall, the linebacker from the Broncos, says it. It means more in the halls of the NFL. And the same is true for Deshaun Watson. And I know Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson weren't in the video, but each of them have had different social media responses that would suggest that they would support the things that are being said. So when you are in a position where the biggest, most important stars are coming out and the future of your product are coming out, you kind of lose any wiggle room to say anything other than what they tell you to say.
That sort of cuts to something you and I have discussed before when we talked about your previous job hitting up the players' union, which is that in the NFL, quarterbacks have a unique amount of power and leverage, no?
Oh, absolutely. They have the power. They are the ones who wield the most power and who everyone looks to. That's whose jerseys we buy. That's who we get excited to promote on this network, is what quarterbacks are playing in Monday Night Football. Those are the people who matter most in the quality of this league. If you enjoy a game, you say it was a good game, it's probably because quarterbacks threw for a lot of yards. If it was a bad game, it's because the quarterbacks weren't very good. Those are the storylines that we know and care about. If they have ups and downs, that is what we're actually paying attention to. As much as we want to pretend it's something else, the quarterbacks are who move the needle in the NFL. So when they say something, and they say it in unison, it's almost as powerful as anybody else in the league.
Which is why when several of those quarterbacks, including Aaron Rodgers, got hurt in 2017 and the NFL ratings declined, it seemed reasonable to draw a connection.
Yeah, that seems to make more sense than blaming it on taking a knee. And people love football in this country. Like, there is a real football addiction. I don't think that people would turn it off because of kneeling as much as they would turn it off because you cannot watch the kneeling. I know many broadcast partners didn't even air it and still watch the football. But it's real hard to watch the football when the football's bad. And the football gets real bad when the quarterbacks are not playing.
So you're saying Brent Hundley under center might have had more of an impact on ratings than people watching.
Yeah, I think Hundley's arm has had more of an impact than Kaepernick's knee on the ratings.
Oh, poor Brent Hundley catching strays on ESPN Daily, just sitting somewhere.
Of all the people you could have picked.
Well, like, yeah, is Rodgers
the
back
quarterbacks
out.
You could have picked.
Well, okay, along those lines about ratings and fans and what they care about, it does seem like based on Roger Goodell's response and some of the comments from coaches that the league is going to let players kneel in the future. Do you think that's inevitable this season?
Yeah, I think it's inevitable. Not only are they going to let him kneel, like Roger said, I protest with you. And I'm not sure if he thinks that his video was a protest, but he did make it clear. Like, there is a suggestion and a belief that he might also participate in these protests. Maybe I'm getting all out ahead of myself with that, but like he did say in the video, I protest with you. So I think we will see a majority of players at some point, maybe not sustained through the season, but I think it's come to mean something else. And that's one thing that's been super interesting about Kaepernick's initial decision to kneel is for so many people, he lost the ability to define what it means. And that's been a bad thing up until now. But now I feel like he's lost the ability to define what it means, but I don't necessarily think that's bad now. I think the idea of kneeling during the national anthem is a show of solidarity and a show of kind of, I see you, I'm listening, I understand. And that's a different demonstration that I think is, I'm not going to argue whether it's more or less valuable, but it is valuable in it of itself.
What did you make of the fact that Roger Goodell, while he did apologize, did not mention Colin Kaepernick?
was clear that Roger was deliberate in not using Colin Kaepernick's name. I think that there could be a lot of reasons why he didn't do it. He may not want to upset the same fan base who views Colin Kaepernick as a symbol of something that they don't like. And there also could be legal reasons why he may not want to invoke Colin Kaepernick's name and admit, essentially, will be admitting to blackballing him from the league. I think that's a distinct possibility.
So after all of this happened, just when you thought things might be settling down in the NFL, President Donald Trump tweeted at Drew Brees over the weekend, told him he should have stood his ground. Drew Brees pushed back. And then the president continued to tweet, writing on Sunday, quote, "Could it be even remotely possible that in Roger Goodell's rather interesting statement of peace and reconciliation, he was intimating that it would now be okay for the players to kneel or not to stand for the national anthem, thereby disrespecting our country and our flag?" Fit all that in one tweet. Dominique, you and I just discussed the likelihood that, yes, that is what Roger Goodell meant. Players can kneel. Why do you think the league is less fearful of rousing the president, given that they apparently were fearful of doing precisely that back in 2017?
Yeah, because I think it's clear that the public is on the other side. It feels clear, like hundreds of thousands of people in the street across this country and frankly in other countries are making it quite clear which side you need to be on if you want to be on the right side. So I think they feel comfortable with that. And I think the president obviously sees this as an opportunity to rile a particular group and bring them to his side. I think that's how he always saw it. And I think he sees it that way now. And hopefully the league can see through that at this point and continues to stand their ground, which I think they have to. The players won't let them backtrack at this point. It's no way that Roger Goodell can now backtrack. It's no way that they can get away with punishing any players going forward. I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine that the rest of the players will show up if they start trying to punish or discipline players for kneeling, because they didn't even do that last time. They just waited till Colin was out of the league and then tried to keep him out.
You and I have had a lot of conversations about how race and sports intersect, especially when it comes to the NFL. Do you think this is a turning point for the sport?
I hope so. You caught me on a good day. Like, I went to the protest this morning and I left feeling optimistic. I don't know if I would have said the same thing last week, but I feel encouraged about the direction that our country is headed. And the same is true about the league. I think there will always be some racial undertones to the construction and the operation of the NFL. But I do think that it feels like there's an opportunity for a power shift. And if we don't get out of this moment without the players understanding their collective power and how they have the leverage to create the league in the way that they want it to be, then I think that's a real loss for us. And I mirror that sentiment for the country writ large.
Thanks so much, Dominique.
Thank you, Mina.
Coming up, as the sports world continues to mourn George Floyd, we remember that Floyd himself was quite an athlete. We're presented by Marathon. Now more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we're aware travel may not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop into the car to run an errand. Or maybe you just want to drive to see your best friend, simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. And right now, you can get 5 cents off every gallon every day with Make It Count rewards from Marathon. Plus, you can earn points for additional savings on fuel, airfare, hotels, and more. This is definitely a deal you can count on. It's also quick and easy to join. Just download the free Make It Count app or go to makeitcount.com/radio and start saving today. This offer is valid only at participating Marathon stations. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit. here's another story I want you to know. Today, George Floyd is laid to rest in Houston, where he was raised. While growing up in Texas, Floyd was a two-sport athlete at Jack Yates High School, where he played football and basketball. Jerry Bembry of The Undefeated wrote about his athletic impact on his community. Jerry, let's start here. How did you first learn about George Floyd's high school sports career?
You know, I just started reading some stories about him, and I saw a mention that he had played college basketball in Florida. So I just did some digging and found his old high school coach in Houston at Jack Yates High School, his football coach, and found out he also played basketball there. And just wanted to kind of dig into that story because I think we had seen the imagery of him on that street in Minneapolis, but we hadn't seen just the human side of what he was really all about as an athlete. So I just wanted to pursue that story and, you know, found out that he was, you know, a really fantastic tight end on the Jack Yates football team and was a, you know, impactful power forward on the basketball team.
And that football team was quite good, right?
That football team played for the state championship in 1992. Floyd had caught three passes for 18 yards in that game. They lost the title game to a team that's from right outside of Austin. But yeah, he was one of their go-to guys. His high school coach, Maurice McGowan, told me that, you know, they put in a special play down at the goal line because he was so tall at 6'5 and weighed about 220. And they just figured to just throw it up in the back of the end zone. He's going to go get it. And more times than not, he did. You know, it's unfortunate that their quarterback wasn't the greatest passer in the world because his numbers may have been through the roof, but yeah, he was impactful on that team that went to the state championship game.
What kind of basketball player was he?
He was solid. I spoke to one of his teammates who said that, you know, he was a guy, he was a Dennis Rodman type, blue collar, just outworked people. I spoke to his college coach at South Florida Community College and said he averaged about 14 points and 10 rebounds a game in the one full season that he played down there. So, yeah, he was a strong guy. And the funny thing is that in basketball, he was a physical type. But in football, he shied away from contact. And his high school football coach told me that they were in practice one day and he went for a pattern down the middle and caught the pass. And their star linebacker was waiting for him. And to avoid the contact, Floyd just stopped in mid-play and handed the linebacker the ball because he wanted no parts of contact. So he wasn't really a physical guy on the football team, but in basketball, he was just that. He was really ready to bang players down in the low post.
Jerry, you spoke with teammates, friends of George Floyd from where he grew up in the Third Ward. What would you say the impact his sports career had on the community was like?
It was huge. He grew up in the CUNY Homes housing projects, which is in Houston in the Third Ward. And I spoke to his teammate, Eddie Barlow, who was a couple of years younger. And he had an impact on Barlow because in the CUNY homes, there weren't a lot of guys who got out. There weren't a lot of guys who went on to college based on athletic scholarships. And I'm sure there were other people in the Third Ward who did that. But in the CUNY homes, for Eddie Barlow, it was rare to see. And so when they saw George get that college scholarship, it was an impact just showing those younger kids that, you know what, I can do this too. I can use athletics, you know, as a vehicle to make something of my life. And what Eddie Barlow did was he went on to play basketball at Sam Houston State. And then he went on to play professionally in Europe for about 13 years. And he's an assistant coach at Yates High School now. So he told me that George Floyd had a tremendous impact on shaping his life, showing him the things that he could do through athletics.
We have talked a lot over the last week or so about the death of George Floyd and the obviously profound impact that's had on this country. But in doing this story, Jerry, you reported on his life. Why did you want to do that?
I think it's important. Anytime I see someone, you know, it's almost just a mention, but it's not a deep dive into who they were all about. And I just wanted, you know, I was curious. It's just my own natural curiosity to find out what was George Floyd like as a person. And I learned a lot you know, George didn't have a perfect life. But through athletics, he had an impact on a lot of people in his community. And they were really grateful for what he did. And I think the show of love in the Houston community since this happened a couple of weeks ago has been obvious in the impact that George Floyd made on the people there. You see everybody getting behind this cause and protesting because, you know, people do realize that, hey, this does happen in this country.
Thanks so much, Jerry.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
I'm Ina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.